This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
America, I am Graham Allen, and welcome to the newest episode of the Dear America podcast. We have the man, myth, the legend, founder of Turning Point USA, Charlie Kirk, on the episode. We talk about abortion, we talk about the Young Turks and Hassan Piker's love for us. We also even venture on to talking about Game of Thrones. You're not going to want to miss this episode, so sit back, relax, and welcome to the Dear America podcast.
Hey!
What's up?
Charlie missed the hey. He missed the
What's
hey.
What's up? Oh, hello.
It's a learned skill, Charlie.
Is it? It
is a learned skill. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Mr. Charlie Kirk is in the studio today. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me. Nice place you got here.
Yeah.
Big fan of yours and of your content.
Oh, no. That's your... So I've been doing this for about 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 years ago, I was active duty in the military. And even I knew this guy, this young guy named Charlie Kirk. And everybody was telling me, man, have you seen this guy, Charlie Kirk? Have you heard about Charlie Kirk? Man, he's doing some stuff, man. And it's really, really awesome. Every time we have somebody like yourself in here, I say it is a really cool, full circle, very humbling thing to have somebody like yourself here. Just really doing something for the Conservative Party, for values. For people that don't know, if they've been living under a rock, 30 seconds, who is Charlie Kirk?
Born and raised from the northwest suburbs of Chicago, Illinois, I started an organization called Turning Point USA, which you're helping us out. Graham's doing a great job with us, and we just had our Young Women's Leadership Summit. We're the nation's largest student movement focused on the ideas of free markets, limited government, constitution, American exceptionalism, things that shouldn't be political issues but unfortunately get described as such in our ridiculous climate that we're living in today.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just grown amazingly, and you've played a huge part in that, and so many other patriots have as well. I also have a podcast that I've launched, Kirk Show. So if you're listening, subscribe to
Please
my podcast.
Do.
First,
yeah.
Give Graham 5 stars, and then go give me 5 stars.
It's funny.
Your legwork for you.
Well, me and Charlie were talking just yesterday that people ask all the time, and they say, do you guys have like competitiveness between you? And I said, you know what? I think it's healthy competitiveness.
It is, yes.
And so me and Charlie were talking about the fact that we watch each other's podcast, where it's at
rankings,
and where we are stuff like that.
But it's really amazing, Graham. I mean, look, there's hundreds of thousands of podcasts out there, and what an honor to even be in the top 50 with you consistently, right? It's really neat.
Same to you, man. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You just launched it. Everything you do seems to turn into a success.
Wow.
And I think it's just a testament to the fact that you're doing the right thing.
Thank you.
And you're going the right way. And we are humbled every single day. You know, there's always that moment. I'm sure you felt this too. When you launch your podcast, you're like, I think it'll do well.
No, I know.
But you never really know until it actually shows up. And it's always nerve-wracking.
Yeah, and for me, it was the first time I ever produced something long form that was standalone.
Right.
That was really something, because I do a lot of speaking and things, but I'd never produce something and try to drive an audience towards something.
Right.
I mean, I have a Twitter account, Instagram, all those different things. That's different, right? That's
right.
Not long form. That's easy to kind of peruse. But it's been a learning experience. I love it. As we're doing the podcast right now.
It's fun, man. It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
I think it's the future of media, too. I really do believe that.
I do, too. So speaking of media, I feel like this is something very important that we need to talk about. It's very serious, Jake. So get your serious face on. Okay. New York, the same state that is good with late-term abortions and basically
post-birth abortions.
Post-birth abortions has started this whole just firestorm about abortion topics, decided that it was time to fix a wrong, decided it was time to pass a bill that declawing cats
Oh,
should be against the law.
Priorities.
Our priorities are really in check there in New York.
Well, I do have to say that that's a ridiculously stupid idea. I actually grew up, I'm not a big cat person.
Right.
I grew up with a dog, but I actually also grew up with two cats. And I'll tell you, having the claws removed on the front part of a cat is, there's a lot of value in that. Seriously, these if a cat gets upset at you, boom. I mean, you could really, you could get injured, especially if like you're five or six years old. I grew up with two cats. Again, cats and I don't really
Do we really have to pass laws about declawing a cat, though? I mean, is that really something?
Well, I'm making a very technical argument
in defense of it. Yeah, I know, but I mean, is that something that we're paying people to do? Like,
I mean, if it's painless to the cat.
I need you to bring to the table the cat declawing issue. That is something we need to talk about.
How about this? How about you can't claw a baby out of the womb? How about that?
How about that?
That would be nice.
How about that? That's a good lead in to we had people submit questions for me and you, Charlie.
Oh, great.
So
I wanted you guys to talk about
one of they like it was like 50% of them were for me and you to talk abortion. So if you're good with that, I would love to.
Well, being two men, we're uniquely qualified.
Well, we are apparently not allowed to have any kind of discussion, and so I'm excited about this. We had to talk to you about it, not about abortion. Everybody knows where I stand. I've been very, very, very vocal about that. But Candace was on the show the other day, and we talked about the fact of the most interesting thing to me and the best thing about the Conservative Party is that we can realize that we don't always 100% agree on everything. And that's okay. You know, but we agree in principle on the basic understanding of conservative values, et cetera. So, and I've heard you talk about this on your podcast before about abortion and things like that. And so I want to jump right into it.
Sure.
Do you agree with Alabama? And this is a safe place because, and I say that knowing that me and you differ slightly, and I think it would be very healthy for the audience to hear us talk about it.
No, I don't. Okay. I do believe in exceptions.
Okay.
And I've said that. I'm very pro-life. I believe that you have exceptions. First of all, you have a rule, so you believe that abortion is wrong.
Right.
And I do believe there should be some exceptions. Mm-hmm. And I've said I think there should be exceptions for rape, incest, life of the mother. I do believe that. And I could walk through exactly why.
Right.
And I will say, though, that I think they passed the law as a direct challenge to Roe versus Wade. So I don't necessarily, if that is the strategy to try to get a higher court case against that, then so be it.
Right.
But my own personal position, first of all, 99.5% of all abortions in the country are for selective reasons.
Exactly.
They're not for rape, incest, life of the mother. Right. So if we can have a consensus that 99.5% of let's just phrase it this way. Should abortion be a form of birth control? No.
No.
Especially not selective birth control.
No.
Right.
Abortion should be an emergency or rare medical procedure. That's something that should be done very rarely. If a mother's life is in jeopardy or if a crime was committed against that mother as a way to, and again, that's not, that shouldn't be something that should be glorified either.
Not celebrated, right?
Yeah. It should be, and unfortunately, the exception becomes the point of focus for the left.
Right.
And so I see Alyssa Milano go on cable television.
Me and her are really good friends.
I just have to say, Graham Allen and I are just absolutely destroying her podcast. Like her podcast.
I take great pride in that.
I see Milano. She's just dropping.
She came out really strong in the beginning, a super surge, and then she just bam.
And
just
I do want to say, I got attacked for not being pro-life for this position I'm espousing. Just to understand. And we as conservatives never, and just my advice to any conservative listeners, don't become a leftist and start saying that to me or people like me.
No, of course not.
And I'm not saying you say that, but I get this. Oh, Charlie, you're not pro-life because you believe in exceptions. I mean, come on. That's silly. And so here's my thought process behind it is that abortion is inherently something that should be very, very cautious the way we proceed against it. I believe that if a woman wants to have an abortion because it's an unwanted pregnancy or is because it's just a decision that she wants and she's perfectly healthy, I don't believe that should be able to happen.
Yeah.
I just don't. Let's just start as a baseline. Right now, heartbeat bill should be a pretty easy bill to pass. Like very, very easy bill to pass.
It
right?
should be a no-brainer, actually. You know,
and you go to, and this is where I believe in the exceptions, and there's people that disagree with it, and that's fine, is that if a woman had a horrendous sexual crime committed against them, like rape, I do not believe then you should use more force to make her keep that child because an act of crime was put against her. I just I that's my own personal opinion.
Right.
On that. Yeah. But let's talk about
agree
the
with that.
Yeah,
but.
and
yeah. Well, and that's what I want to talk to you
yeah,
about.
Yeah, and that was the Alabama thing with no exceptions.
Exactly. And so I agree with you about 98% on this. So I mean, we agree about 98%. So for me, I you know, people know, and you know, I was in the military for a while, and so I tend to operate and think much more in the military would never make a decision based on less than 1% of something. You know, they would always do this. And so for me, I think that I think Alabama made the right call, and this is why I think they made the right call. Alabama, in my opinion, took the emotion out of their decision, and basically they put it up like this, and I'm going to get to where me and Candace had a conversation about this, is they put it basically like this. If you put two sonograms up, and then you identify which one is the rape baby, you know, which one was due to rape. And what Alabama did was, it's kind of like the freedom argument. You can't argue freedom for all and then pick and choose who that actually applies to. So they took that mindset and they said, you can't say that if two people have consensual intercourse or sex or however you want to label it, and then a baby is created there, you can't say, well, that's a baby, and that baby is entitled to rights and freedoms and protections, et cetera, and then say, well, because these actions... And it is absolutely horrible. I am not saying that it's not. And in fact, I believe that we should have much stricter punishments for rapists. You know, that we should invest in counseling services and care for individuals that have experienced this during the course. But then if a baby is created, if we get into the process of saying who is and who is not a real person. And then Candace brought up a really good point yesterday that I haven't even thought about. She said that it actually will most likely increase rape claims.
Yeah,
because if you put it into law, people are going to figure out a way to weave around that law.
With your permission, if I could push you on this
a little
bit.
Of course, please, yes.
So do you believe life begins at conception?
Religiously, yes. Yes, I do.
Or scientifically.
Yes, scientifically,
okay.
I do. The second the fertilization happens with the sperm and the egg.
So then do you believe in rape kits?
That's a good question. You know, again, I will say that the rape kit or the morning after pill, et cetera, that would be more of a you don't know that it has happened decision yet. You see what I'm saying?
It's an abortifacient.
It is abortifacient. What I'm saying is when you have someone who knows that they're pregnant, either due to rape or et cetera, that's what I'm getting at. If you take the morning after pill, it could be hit or miss at that point, right? I think they said even less than 1% of the less than 1% of rape victims actually become pregnant. So the morning after pill to me, and this is just where I stand on it, immediately thinking is you are taking it for a 50-50, maybe you were impregnated,
but
maybe you
weren't. Right?
There is still a chance, but there's a difference in a chance and knowing. And so then, so that's where I'm at as far as the Alabama law goes. I believe that they made the right decision for the law that they're trying to go there.
It's a respectable position.
Yeah,
so where I come from is
I
do believe in rape kits, obviously. And so if we're consistent with the idea that something horrendous happens to a woman, by the way, I believe in permanent incarceration, life in prison for any rapist.
Of course.
That should be a national standard.
Absolutely.
The average rapist spends 5.5 years in prison. It's disgusting. It's horrible. And it's mostly because of trial lawyers on the far left that get these animals off. So
correct.
I want to just...
Convicted rapists.
Yeah, convicted by jury with evidence.
By jury,
jury that appears, cross-examination, due process, all that sort of stuff. Not accusation, all that crap, right?
Exactly.
But actual due process, conviction, DNA evidence, all that sort of stuff, right?
Right.
So a woman, something happens to her, and she goes into a hospital. Some people, in a very, very strict religious interpretation, believe that any form of a birth control pill is an abortifacient.
Exactly,
and it's hard, if you believe life begins in conception, essentially aborting after pill will... completely, you know, will destroy any form of fertilization. Right.
Well, so I don't believe religiously that birth control, condoms and things like that are
wrong. So that's preventative.
Preventative.
This is different. This is a morning after pill. A rape kit will go and destroy a fertilized egg. That's different.
Right.
So that's different than, and we can get hyper technical into this, right? Where, you know, wearing a condom that prevents the actual sperm from entering the fertilization process. So there's a, you can get, there's the Catholic interpretation, more Catholic interpretation where that's wrong too, but there's an extra step. So I guess my opinion is women should be able to have that, I hate to say freedom, but that's, they should be able to do that because something horrendous happens to them. So if you're if I'm consistent with myself, I say, yes, I do believe in that abortifacient, which is horrendous at the hospital the day after that happens. Then I do. I think there should be a. I think you should have 8 weeks to make that decision, right, up into the heartbeat, and that's a horrendous thing to think about. In some ways, not horrendous. That's not the right word, but it's a difficult thing to think about.
No. It's a terrible thing to talk about, right? And that's what makes it difficult because it is such a horrific thing to talk about, and it's not easy.
And it, again, I want to reinforce this. This is the exception.
Yes,
it's the exception, not the rule. And so, I would love to get to a place where we're talking about exceptions, and we can say, you know what. The 99.5% of abortions that are for selective reasons, we have decided that that's no longer acceptable in our country.
Yeah, and if we can be honest of what we're actually discussing and what people were actually so upset about is Alabama did not put a rape clause into their bill.
Which bothered me.
Which bothered you. But to me, they made it off of not the way that you're thinking about it. They're talking about the fact of people that know that they're pregnant. They know, i.e. they've gone to the doctor, they've taken a pregnancy test. It has been long enough time has passed that now they're able to find out that they're pregnant, being able to say, well, I was raped, and now I no longer want the baby.
And as an intermediary step, I think the Louisiana bill is more, I think, a correct, where they have a heartbeat. They have a heartbeat bill. I think that's starting there.
Mississippi did the same thing. Georgia.
And it will probably get overturned by some activist judge somewhere, right? And I think a poor argument on the left is, well, people are going to get abortions anyway. Well, that's a silly argument. It's like saying, should we outlaw anything?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's like, should we
gun owners are just going to get guns.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so should we have any laws? I mean, that's so silly.
Yeah.
I mean, so I don't agree with that. Like, well, people are going to go, well, of course people are going to continue to do bad things. That's not an excuse not to have laws.
Right.
Yeah. And my only thought towards the 99% of the time, or let's say the 1% of the time it's rape, is that it really sucks for those 1%.
That's true.
It's like, well,
but if you ask, women, and I know several now that were impregnated by the horrible act of rape that decided to keep their child, not one of them has said, you know what, I wish I really hadn't done that, you know. And so hashtag Dear America, please let us know. Hashtag Dear America, Twitter, Instagram. Let us know what you think. I would love to. I would love to know what you think. And again, I think that this is healthy for people to hear two people that are friends, two people that agree on 99% of things and slight differences. I think that it's very healthy and very positive for people to hear that, because unfortunately we live in a society right now that if we don't agree 100% on everything, we have to hate each other.
That's correct.
And newsflash to America, you're never going to agree with someone 100% of everything ever. It doesn't happen. Me and my wife have been married for 10 years, and there are days that I'm sure she wants to bury me in the backyard, you know, because I can be kind of hard-headed. But the point is, you have to be able to have these discussions. You have to be able to have them civil. You have to be able to have civil discussions and out of respect for the other person's position and listening to what they have to say. That's a very good point that you brought up. It's a very good point. Where I stand right this second, immediately getting hit with your question, is I think there's a difference between knowing and the what if. And again, I think that if we want to look at the laws, I think we need to come from a standpoint of preventative standpoint, i.e. instead of deciding what actually is a person and what's not based on the situation. Does that make sense?
Sure.
What I'm saying? Yeah. Anyway, I think that's a very good question. Thank you for participating in that.
Let's veer off of the abortion topic, Jay.
Well, we got in trouble because we said caveat when we should have said segue. So now we try to avoid both those words altogether. We got to obliterate for it. Good. Go.
This is another question. This person wants you guys to talk about the lack of competition on the left, especially Hassan Piker.
He loves me.
That was a misspell.
Hassan and I are really good friends.
For those of you who are listening audio, that was a very sarcastic statement.
So
from
y'all
Charlie.
Know who he is. Okay.
I know who he is.
Sounded familiar.
Every time I have a video that goes super, super big, Hassan does a Graham Allen is a white supremacist idiot recant video
fabulous.
To everything that I say. Excuse me.
So you do know, I just have to say this. The Young Turks, if
great organization.
Well, let's talk about this.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, please.
So for those that don't know, the Young Turks was a military arm that participated in one of the worst human rights catastrophes, genocides. Oh, they committed the Armenian genocide. And the Armenian genocide is a real thing.
Correct.
And they are they are genocide deniers. They are. And if you can go look at it, it's all online. Anytime that they asked anyone in that organization about the Armenian genocide, they're like, oh, you know, I know lots of Armenian people. They were horribly persecuted by the Turks. I mean, who would name an organization after that? I mean, it's one of the worst things. It's like naming your organization the Red Army or something. Yeah, it's like, what are you doing?
What they do is...
So yeah, they attack us all the time.
Yeah, the Young Turks...
I actually get along fine with Hassan.
Well, I've never met him personally. He likes to... I posted something about... just the other day, he said something that to me... I didn't even acknowledge it because it was so horrific. I said something about Snoop Dogg's horrific post on Memorial Day that I found just completely...
Disrespect.
Basically, he posted a post 9/11 black soldier in OIF gear and basically said rest in peace to all the black veterans that died for a country that never did anything for them. And so I of course found issue with that, especially since Snoop Dogg is case in point the American dream of, you know, coming from horrible upbringings and gang violence and things and becoming
makes millions
a millionaire worldwide known person. But either way, so Hassan retweeted my video with his own comment and said, you know, I don't wake up a single day without wanting to give fellatio to every service member out there kind of thing. Kind of like, you know, this guy's a tool for, you know, supporting all military people because Hassan thinks that there's a large group of military veterans that are terrible individuals and terrible people. And he does not respect the military. Sorry, he may come back and eat me up on that, but things like that and respect the military.
There's no depth in that comment. I mean,
no, there's not.
I mean, have a little bit more wit than having to go immediately to the sexual innuendo jokes.
Right.
I mean, can the left say anything without having to either use vulgar language or some sort of obscene? I mean, and this goes to show the left has total. First of all, they're not funny anymore.
No.
Like, I used to love to watch late night comedy.
Right.
And now it's not late night comedy. Do you notice that no one in the audience ever laughs anymore? They just applaud.
Yeah. Oh, because it's not funny.
No,
because they're mandated to do it. The applause sign comes up.
They're not telling jokes. They're telling political commentary. Yes, I hate Trump.
Yeah.
These people used to be funny. Jay Leno used to be an equal opportunity offender. He used to make fun of Obama. He used to make fun of the Republicans.
Used to be an escape from your
and comedy.
But there's a difference between poking fun at somebody for comedic reasons.
Right.
And that's what they've lost. Mm-hmm. Everyone can tell that, you're not just trying to be funny. You hate everything that Donald Trump stood for. Daniel Tosh. I listen to Daniel Tosh.
He used to be funny.
Used to be funny, but he's always been known for just this. Did he really just say that? But he's blatantly honest about the fact that these are jokes. I mean, I don't really believe those things.
There's a real technical reason for comedy. I mean, comedy, like you said, is an escape and a release, but it also... And a lot of different people, and you think about this, most people communicate through humor.
Yes.
You remember a joke of a speech a lot more than anything else. I mean, you'll remember comedy is a relief from the suffering that is life.
Right.
And as soon as the rise of political correctness has been the death of speech, the death of discourse, and also it threatens our capacity to challenge boundaries. And that's what comedy has always done.
Yes.
And comedy has always been one of the vehicles that, and by the way, I think some of the smartest, most creative people are comedians.
Oh,
because
yes.
You cannot be a dumb comedian. It's never existed.
No.
You have to be creative.
It's
hard
to be funny. I mean, it really is. It's not something that's easy. You know, it'd be like going to anybody on the street and go out there and make people laugh. You just can't do it.
No, I mean, you could do something like slapstick once. And then that's
exactly.
Real comedy is supposed to make you uncomfortable.
Exactly. And so there's an organization there's an organization out right now called Vet TV. And they really put to light that aspect of how dark humored a lot of military people are. And it's their way of coping with a lot of the things that military people have seen. And so if you were to listen to it out of context, you would think, oh my gosh, these are the most vulgar, horrible people I've ever met. But it's comedy. It's not meant to be serious. It's a way to escape. Robin Williams, in my opinion, is one of the funniest people to ever live.
He had a lot of internal struggle.
But that's my point. A lot of times these people that are the funniest people you ever meet and are the nicest people and truly care about people and just want to make them happy are normally the ones that are struggling and have such internal demons, and it's their way to cope with that. And we've lost the ability to be funny here in America these days. And I think that the Young Turks especially prove our point. I'd love to have Hassan on the show. I doubt he would ever.
I've debated him twice.
I saw the one at Politicon over Venezuela. I saw that. Yeah. I saw that. That was a fantastic video. Just wouldn't let him talk, and you just start just reciting off facts. All this stuff, man. Yeah. It was fantastic.
Thank you. Well, and the final thing I'll say just on comedy is that, and just this humor and comedy in general, is that as America becomes more politically correct, I think we become less decent to each other. And you think about that. So if you can't make a joke about yourself, you can't take a joke. Right. All of a sudden, you're going to be much less tolerant of other people.
Yes.
And you think about it. What I think has kept America really moving in the correct direction for 50 or 60 years is our ability to make fun of our differences.
Mm-hmm.
Not our differences, that's the wrong way to put it, but make fun of ourselves.
Right.
And so, you know, make fun of self-deprecation humor is one of the greatest things. And so whether it be Seinfeld in the 1990s, I mean, there's Seinfeld without be allowed on television today.
The Office is another one.
Diversity Day, are you kidding me?
Yeah, exactly.
They would not, or how about the basketball episode in season one? Yep. I mean, these things are...
That's why Steve Carell has said, no, I'm not bringing the show back because they would eat us alive.
But this is the opposite of progress.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is the opposite of progress. I mean, if you watch Diversity Day, I encourage everyone listening to this podcast, first subscribe to my podcast, then Graham, give us both 5 stars.
Yes.
Then go, shameless plug. Then go watch Diversity Day. Diversity Day is one of the most brilliant pieces of writing.
Oh, it's amazing.
And it is funny.
It is hilarious.
Look, in today's time, just to everyone understand, this was NBC Network television.
Yep.
Where there was an exercise where they had people have to write down a race that they couldn't see and put the race on their head.
Yep.
And they had to guess what the other race was.
By acting out the stereotype of what they thought the race was. Unbelievably bad stereotypes. Yeah.
And it pushed boundaries.
It did.
It is hilarious.
And it's considered one of the greatest episodes in
television. Yeah. And one of the greatest in television history.
Yep. Yeah.
And that would not be allowed on television today.
No.
You go to some of the Seinfeld episodes and you say, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I think it's hilarious. All of a sudden, I'm looking through this 2019 political lens, and I said, I grew up watching this stuff.
Yeah, South Park's the same way.
Oh, my God, forget about it. I mean, South Park.
It's yeah. Be, you know. So you brought TV and movies into this, so I'm glad you did, because we had a podcast just the other day where I said, guns aren't the problem, Aladdin is. That was the title of the thing. And I based it off of you. I quoted you because I listened to one of your podcasts, and you went on this beautiful explanation of how you could tell how our society and culture has changed from the movies that we make.
Yes.
And you talked about Lord of the Rings and Star Wars, and you went down this path here. And I'll paraphrase it, but basically you said that in every major amazing film, it was basically the same.
That's correct.
It had the same basic undertone story of overcoming adversity, finding your path and your vision, and then transforming into greatness.
That's pretty much.
And so I brought up my issue with the new Aladdin movie.
I haven't seen it.
Okay.
So,
all right. Well, I hate to spoil something.
I don't think
for
you're
you.
Going to spoil
okay.
it for me.
All right. So, if you see, and I brought this up because we took my children to see the new one. And then, you know, I noticed some differences in it. And then the very next day, me and my wife showed them the original. And two main things that I noticed is the 1992 Aladdin.
I love that movie.
I love that movie. It's one of my favorite Disney
Phenomenal.
Movies. 1992 Aladdin, if you had to break it down in bullet points of what it was about, it was about person from humble beginnings.
Sure.
Who cares about other people more than himself, finds a way to become better, and find true love in the process.
Yeah, sure.
The 2019 version of Aladdin shifted the focus from Aladdin to Jasmine, and it basically made it to where women are not equal, men are holding them down, and women deserve to be in charge. That was the shift in the tone there. And they also eliminated very key parts that most people probably would not have picked up. They added music. They added this song, Speechless, which is basically Jasmine pretty much saying that they will not let me speak. They will not let me speak my mind. I deserve to be in charge, which I'm not saying women don't deserve to be in charge. That's not what I'm saying. They also eliminated key parts of Aladdin, where he stops people from getting beat. He stands up for people that are being picked on. He shares this. And they showed it, but it was this really quick, like, two-second thing, instead of focusing on the fact that Aladdin actually really cared more about other people than himself. And I just found it to be ironic that I listened to your podcast saying that, and then I saw it in was Aladdin really so bad that we needed to fix it? Social justice wise, that we needed to go in and fix the problems
not
that
in
were
America.
With Aladdin.
I mean, in the Middle East, maybe that will.
Well, I was going to say. I mean, you know, if there's any place where women aren't equal, it'd be in the Middle East. My goodness.
True, true, but it wasn't a Middle Eastern production company doing this type of stuff.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, Disney's worldwide.
Well, and I love film, and I think again, thank you for the kind words about the podcast. Thank you, it means a lot, and. I film and media and movies and music are nothing more than a reflection of the times and the cultural attitude and the values within the time that it's created. And so the point I was making is that Western civilization, our society, the greatest society ever created in the history of the world, without a shadow of a doubt, and hopefully we can preserve and protect it, was created on the idea of the hero's journey.
Yep.
And the hero's journey is a really simple concept.
That.
Yeah, it's really simple. It's timeless, and all of us. It's in all of our stories, and they go back to the Bible. It's really simple. It's that you have an individual that is born in less than desirable circumstances. Mm-hmm. That so you use Lord of the Rings, you use Harry Potter, and you use Star Wars as the three examples, right? So you have somebody. It's always the uncles, right? They always grew up around uncles, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, whether it be Harry Potter, uncle. Lord of the Rings, you know, Uncle Bilbo Baggins, or Star Wars, Uncle Ben, right? It was Uncle Ben? Yeah, I think it was Uncle Ben.
Hercules.
Or Tatooine, right?
And Hercules, same
deal,
thing.
Right?
Yeah,
so this
all
kind
this
of
stuff.
This idea of an orphan, right, that you don't have your parents, which is, what does that also show?
Superman.
What also admits, it also admits the nuclear family is super important, so that just by not having a nuclear family, you have less than a desirable circumstance. That's kind of the interesting subtext. But then it goes to show that the individual goes away from its comfort zone. And every person in your life, if you want to be successful, you have to get out, you have to go off the edge of your bed, right?
Oh,
that's that whole
100%,
idea. And it's easy to go back to bed. It's easy to sleep through the alarm, right? That's the easy thing to do in life.
Yeah.
So you have to go outside of your comfort zone.
The underworld.
Well, yeah, exactly. And so for Frodo, it was going out of the Shire, right?
Well, right.
And again, Peter Jackson did such an amazing thing in Lord of the Rings. The beauty and the innocence of the Shire was evident, right? It's just, it's nothing but bright colors, right?
Right.
And then immediately you leave the Shire, and then they have those dark night scenes, right? And you're just gray, and you see that contrast. And for Harry Potter, literally, he grew up underneath a stairwell. Could anything be more innocent? Could anything be more humbling than growing up under a stairwell? Literally under a stairwell. And then he leaves that place of, I guess you could call it comfort. He wasn't exactly happy there, but he leaves that place that is super innocent to a place that's not innocent, right?
Right.
And then he goes and he experiences the harsh realities of the world. Fast forward really quick. They assemble a team because you can never do anything alone.
True.
Even Jesus had disciples,
exactly.
right?
Exactly.
And so what's the team? Well, in Lord of the Rings, he had Aragorn and Legolas and Sam, who's really important, right?
Sam,
one of the great characters in all of literature, right? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, in Harry Potter, you have Ron, you have Hermione, you have all these amazing, you have Dumbledore. But that's the other thing, is right? You find someone older than yourself, and you mentor, right? So it's this idea that maybe you don't know everything.
Right.
So there's this intergenerational wisdom, which is getting destroyed
in
our
culture. Are you saying that we don't know everything in 2019?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
And actually, it's important that what these stories teach us, whether it be Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, again, you don't actually consciously realize the importance of these films until 15, 20 years later, like until the movies don't express this anymore. So what do we learn from Harry Potter? What do we learn from Lord of the Rings also is that you have to ask older people, to know the road ahead, ask those coming back, hey, how do I guide myself through this broken world, right? So Gandalf tells Frodo words of wisdom. Dumbledore tells Harry Potter words of wisdom,
right?
And then Star Wars, they tell people words of wisdom. Well, Obi-Wan Kenobi, as older, tells Luke Skywalker. What happens to all three of those characters? They all die.
Yeah.
Every single one of them. Now, Gandalf comes back to life.
Yeah, as Gandalf the White.
Right, exactly. But Dumbledore you know, if you haven't, if you're not caught up on Harry
Spoiler
Potter,
alert.
By now, I know.
Sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's your own fault.
If you're not caught
point,
up,
yeah.
I'm sorry. Okay. So, not my fault. And then, of course, Obi-Wan dies. But then what has to happen, though? There's a wisdom transference.
Right.
That's the other lesson, is that all of a sudden the wisdom has to be carried on further
yep.
to that next generation, which is how societies were built.
Exactly.
Is that you had the elders pass it down.
Yep.
And then finally, what is realized is that the true struggle in Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, and Star Wars is not external. It's actually inside of you. Harry Potter, it's the evil inside mm-hmm. of him. It's literally yep. the scar. Yep. Luke Skywalker.
The dark side.
It's the whispering of the dark side, yep. right? And of course, in Lord of the Rings, it's Frodo hearing the whisper of
the ring.
Yep. the ring, the mm-hmm. entire time. Yep. And then there's that climax moment where that hero has to make the decision. Am I going to embrace the worst or do the best? And then more times than not, it's the people around him that save you from yourself at times. And that's Frodo with
right.
Sam. Yeah. And so anyway,
the
stories aren't reflecting
point.
This anymore. So I look at the new Star Wars, which are garbage.
Yeah.
No, they are. And I'm not. There's no story.
Yeah.
No. I mean, the special effects, I love all that stuff. That's fine. Whatever. But I look at this and I say, what's the moral compass yeah. of the new Star Wars?
It looks really cool, but what's the moral compass of it?
I can't yeah. tell you.
What's that new movie, Jake, that it's basically, it's a horror movie, but it's the evil, what if Superman had been bad? Like, that's the whole premise
Brightburn.
Of the movie. Like, it's the same premise, this outer stellar galaxy crashes down into a cornfield. The farmers find him. They raise him up. It's the Superman story, right? Yeah. But then about middle school, this kid decides that he can beat everybody up and make people do whatever he wants to do, and he starts killing everybody.
But then is there a hero against him eventually that gets him? Or
I haven't seen the movie.
Brightburn
or something.
Basically,
the premise is, what if Superman had been bad, kind of thing. Mm. But since you said that, I have seen it even more so in yeah. everything.
Well, and you see it, some of the best pieces of television in the last couple of years, I think it was Breaking Bad. I think Breaking Bad is one of the greatest pieces of television ever created.
Oh, yeah.
And Sopranos before that. What did Sopranos and Breaking Bad have in common? Well, it glorified the anti-hero.
Yeah.
Because that's real. And so, I mean, you look at Breaking Bad, and again, if your audience hasn't seen this stuff, I'm sorry, but if you have...
Once it passed a year or
But I'm saying that this might not resonate with them, but you look at Breaking Bad, you have someone in the most innocent position possible.
Right.
He's healthy, has a family, full head of hair. His name is literally Walter White.
Wow.
You have a name that is more, you know, innocent
science
than White.
Teacher.
Science teacher. Yeah, exactly. And then what happens when the realities of life, the harsh chaos of life comes into you. And then the whole part, Breaking Bad is 15 different morals, 15 different things you can learn, 50. But the one that I think is really interesting is moral relativity.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest takeaway. How far am I willing to push the boundaries to justify something I consider to be right? And we all do this in one sense, one or the other, right? Am I willing to run a red light to get home in time for dinner because I want to see my kids?
No comment.
No, you
no
know what I'm saying? No, but that's a little thing, right?
Right.
And we consider it not to be a big deal. Or am I willing to tell, you know, like, well, you know, hey, when are you going to be home? And you say it's going to be 5 minutes when you really know it's going to be 15 minutes, right? And that's small stuff, right?
Yeah.
But the stuff in Breaking Bad started this small stuff,
exactly.
right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Started this really small stuff. Hey, when are you going to be home? He was like, remember? He was like, well, all of a sudden, next thing you know, five seasons later, he's murdering people.
Yeah,
right.
Jesse's girlfriend dies on the bed.
And Breaking Bad, some of the most phenomenal.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And that's what it really pushes boundaries, and that's art. And now you have all this garbage on TV where it's I feel as if there's like the social justice lesson behind all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with that is that there's no principle.
Yeah.
That's the left. The left has no principle. Everything what the left does is about deconstruction.
Well, Dennis Prager said it. Dennis Prager said it best, that the reason that you see such unhappiness and chaos from the left is because they're not based on doctrine or principle.
No, of course not.
And when you're not based in doctrine and principle, then you live in a state of chaos.
Yeah, the left builds nothing. The left is all about one word, deconstruction.
Yep.
Everything.
Yeah.
Everything the left wants to do is tear things down. And so when your whole guiding principle is everything before you has been a mistake.
Yep, and you need to fix it, but you have nothing to base it upon.
Can anyone tell me anything the left has ever built? Anything.
Hmm.
They destroy things. They destroyed the Boy Scouts. They destroyed movies. They destroyed television. They're trying to destroy the American church.
Family.
They've destroyed the family.
Yep.
They've destroyed government. I mean, have they ever built anything
no.
of value?
No, that's a good point.
That's because their whole their whole guiding principle is deconstructionism.
So let's switch it fun real quick before we go back into questions. We were talking about movies.
I could do this all day long.
Oh yeah, no, I can too. But let's be respectful for your time constraints that you have. You could be the busiest man outside of the president that I know. Yeah. Anyway, all right. Real quick, movie vein. Game of Thrones ending. What did you think?
Okay. So I
spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Turn it off now if you have not seen it.
I'm a massive Game of Thrones fan, so I get really bitter about Game of Thrones. Because I was watching it, I think, before most people. I was a second season of Doctor.
We were late. Me and Jake both binged watched like all the seasons in like 2 months.
I've been a disciple of Game of Thrones. I was a huge Lord of the Rings fan, and I started watching Game of Thrones because I was a huge Boromir fan in Fellowship of the Ring, who died, and he ended up being the actor of Ned Stark.
Right? Yeah.
And I think of his name, Sean something. Great guy.
I can't
remember. Great actor.
Bean. Yeah, Sean Bean.
And so. I love Game of Thrones. I'm a contrarian by nature, just so you understand. So whenever I hear the vast majority of people have a specific public opinion, I inherently try to go the other way, no matter what it is, right? Whether it be China or trade, I'm like, come on, man, all these people.
That's why I was late to Game of Thrones, because everybody loved it.
Well, no, I was before it. I was season two when people weren't sure if the show was going to survive.
Right. Gotcha.
There was a time when they weren't sure this thing was going to keep going. Because season two, it wasn't the cult classic that it is. I loved the last season.
Yeah.
And people think I'm absolutely out of control. So let me tell you why. So Daenerys burning the city.
Yes.
Okay. People say, oh my goodness, this was horrific. This was all these sort of things. Well, first of all, I think some of it could have been written better. Let me say that. I think that where they really did a disservice was they didn't have a moment where they utilized the character of Bran to reflect back on the last season, six seasons.
Yeah.
So Bran had an amazing ability to go back in time at any piece of time. So they could have easily used that to bring back Ned, to bring back Rob, to bring back Catelyn, to bring back all these amazing characters that got us where we were today.
Right.
Right. So they could have had other characters.
Like a retrospective thing.
Godfather 2, go back and all of a sudden they could have tied it together, this beautiful thing. And so they could have brought back all these actors for a singular episode before the White Walkers came.
Right.
And so I think they could have extended the Night King a little bit further. They build up this Night King, and all of a sudden I think that was a little bit anticlimactic and a little bit too
Arya
Hollywood
coming
for
in
me.
There. Yeah.
But the episode that I loved, there's two of the episodes that I loved. I loved the tension building up to the Night King.
Right.
I loved this. I love how deliberate and how quiet Winterfell was before the Night King came. And Graham, you have been at war, and I'm not going to say what war is or anything because I haven't, but I've heard other veterans comment that there was a lot of accuracy in how they depicted just how still things were before a firefight. And you've done that, right?
It's weirdly odd before you go out on a mission or things like that. And I haven't thought about it till you said it. But yeah, I mean, it's very much that. It's a lot of you've prepared. You end up kind of sitting around, you know, kind of like joking back and forth. What are we going to do until this time when we move out?
Yeah, so maybe you could comment on the accuracy. I've read online that a lot of veterans have said that's pretty accurate. And so let me tell you, the episode where Daenerys burns down King's Landing got such hatred online. And I first said to my, first of all, she's never been the hero of this show. People have tried to make her into the hero, but her story has always been about revenge.
Yes.
Her story has always been about something that we as a society
should
not relish. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Her story has always been about moral justification for a bigger end. That's not stuff that we
social
embrace.
Justice.
It. Right. We or trying to, the ends justify the means has always been the story of Daenerys Targaryen.
Yeah. It's true.
Always.
It's true.
And so then she gets on her dragon, and again, I didn't like how all the, you know, they're able to be so deathly accurate with these scorpions, and all of a sudden they can't shoot her out of the, I didn't like that. You know, anyway, but the imagery was phenomenal. I think the last scene of the imagery was unbelievable. And so she burns down, you know, she's there, the bells are ringing. And I think the idea that at that moment she would accept Cersei's surrender would have been vastly unrealistic to write it that way.
No, you're right. Yeah. You're right. She wanted Cersei gone.
Well,
and
not only that, but she had to make a conscious decision. And some would make the decision that most conquerors would make. I mean, look at her, no different than Alexander the Great or Napoleon Bonaparte, is I have a specific throne to overthrow here. And I'm going to go scorched earth. The final thing I'll say is this, is that if we kid ourselves that in World War II that we did not participate in firebombing and there was not firebombing that existed, And war is a horrible thing. And you've heard me comment on this, Graham. It's just a horrible, horrible thing. And our veterans are heroes. You're a hero, Graham. No. But I think we should not glorify war. We should not glamorize war. And I think that Game of Thrones did a service to the broader population to realize that they could have shot this a lot differently. They could have just shot, you know, Daenerys doing firebombing or, you know, from a distance. They showed the brutality of the civilians getting killed, right? And that shows that, look, there's a cost to conquering. There's a cost to this. And then that, of course, you know, she gets to the top. I didn't like how she was killed. I didn't like that at all. And all of a sudden, I don't understand why everyone was listening to Tyrion after he was in prison, right? He gave this valiant speech.
I'm a Tyrion fan. I like Tyrion's
but
character.
But I liked
throughout.
The reality of the second to last episode. I really did, because that to me, I said, okay, there's something that I think connects to the real world here.
Right.
But I think it could have ended a lot differently.
Yeah, the writers didn't give necessarily people what they wanted. They gave what they felt would actually have probably been the most realistic thing that would have happened.
And it's a hard thing because they were struggling with themselves. Because I guarantee you, and this is what happens when the left takes over things, they were like, wait, do we make a big social justice message? Do we turn this thing into a democracy? As you can tell, Sam brings it up. Mm-hmm. You know, do we bring it into a, you know, a kind of, do we have a woman win? Because that's kind of the, you know, maybe that's what we want to do. Yeah. All of a sudden, you could tell they were struggling with themselves. They had no direction.
Yeah.
And they didn't have an end in sight. And what they really should have done is they should have chose how they wanted to end it many seasons ago. And then they just build themselves up to it. And you could tell they were undecided up to the last moment.
Right, right.
That doesn't work very well that way.
Yep.
So,
do you think we're going to have an Arya pirate
spinoff? Yeah, probably. And I don't like spinoffs. Like Better Call Saul was garbage.
Yeah,
which was a spinoff of Breaking Bad.
I kind
of
liked it.
I don't. I always
did. You like it?
I did.
And so we might have a spinoff. Maybe, I guess. Again, I'm not that into. I get into really specific things, and now everyone's talking about all these other shows. I'm like, I'm done. Okay, like, I got it. Like I'm not doing that anymore. And it's just.
We got a hard out, guys. So we got about 2 minutes.
All right.
Left.
So what was the other most gigantic question?
Democratic we got? Presidential predictions.
Okay.
Not Joe Biden. Joe Biden will not be the nominee. The center. This is not Obama's party. It's not Biden's party. It's not Booker's party. It's not Warren's party. This is AOC's party. And she has the most amount of energy, most amount of enthusiasm, most amount of respect, small dollar donors, you name it. She's commanding the audience. And someone in her blend who is angry, who is clueless, will end up being the nominee.
So you're saying 2024?
No. I'm saying that in her mold.
So you're saying that we don't know who it is yet?
No, of course not. I don't think we do. I mean, but I'm saying is that it's not Biden. That's what I can say. Hmm. He's everything that they detest. He's a male, he's white, and he is old. Those are the three things that they absolutely don't want, right? And he is going to snap at some point, and you're already seeing it. I mean, he's already starting to flounder. He's already starting to decline in the polls. I've said this since the day he's announced. I said, this guy's not going to be the nominee. So it's going to, I mean, I think Warren's going to have a little bit of a resurgence. We'll see how that works.
Really?
Yeah, she's like an angry librarian, though. Like, I get it. Like, my book's overdue. Stop screaming at
she's
me.
Like everybody's, she's like everybody's aunt that has a lot of cats.
Yeah. No, I mean, I get it. Like,
quiet.
Just, yeah, exactly. Oh, she's you're too loud. Like, I mean, shut up. Like,
last question.
Sure.
I can see where you're going there. I would say, I don't know. I don't see Sanders taking it, but one thing that's been interesting to me is to watch the influence Sanders is having, because AOC does kind of fall in his corner a little bit. Mm. When Sanders says something as crazy,
everyone else parrots it.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I would say to watch that's something that's been interesting to me to watch with Sanders is he does seem to be, people seem to be afraid to directly go against
the stupidest idea
Sanders.
That I've ever heard of, which is having felons vote. I mean, have terrorists vote.
Everybody just fell in line with it.
Because they didn't want to oppose Bernie Sanders.
Right.
But has Joe Biden said anything that other people fall in line behind? No, that's true. Mm-hmm. There's no energy behind it.
No. Yeah. Last question, because this did come in. I'm going to throw it in. I know we got to go. Is Charlie Kirk ever going to run for president? No. I know you get it a lot. I know you get that a lot.
Look, it's a question that I get too often. Look, I love what I get to do. I'm not going to run for anything. Turning Point USA is kicking ass and taking names.
Yep.
Podcast, we got to get the podcast up there. As long as
it's going to happen,
as long as Graham's right there,
it's going to happen.
Or maybe it's a little bit about it.
I can be a solid number two.
No, it's good. No, or maybe you'll be for who knows.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm focusing on. I love ideas. I love the communication of them. Let other people do the politician thing. Right. Like, you really think that I'm built for, you know, being in, are you kidding me? Like, going around all that stuff? No way.
You never know, man.
No. I love being able to say what I believe and really, you know, the movement you have. You saw at our Young Women's Summit, the energy and the enthusiasm, man, is really palpable.
So. Cool. Where can everybody find you? And my voice is going out for some reason.
Go to Apple Podcast. Download the Charlie Kirk Show. Press subscribe. Give us 5 stars after you do it to Graham's show. Only after.
Jake.
You can find me on Instagram at producer_Jake.
That's good.
And I sound like an adolescent child, but you can find me, Graham Allen, everywhere. That's it for this episode of the Dear America Podcast.
That was fun.
Charlie, thanks so much for coming on. We love what you do. That's all we got, and we'll see you again next time.